Okay, so today we're going to discuss Beria. It comes up in Tosos. It's a very fascinating sugya in the following sense. There are two sugyas in Shas about Beria. What is a Beria? Let's just define it first. We're not going to fully define it right now because it's going to be a big machlokas. What is a Beria? But essentially the idea is that sometimes even something very tiny will count as if it were much bigger because it's whole, because it's complete. So let's say if you were to have like a tiny leg of a fly that falls into the iced tea that they serve in camp, let's say, just the leg of a fly, and you can't find it because you've seen a fly's legs, they're very, very thin, right? That would be batel. It would be batel, b'shishim b'meya b'elef, whatever. It would be absolutely batel. What if an entire creature were to fall into the iced tea? So even if there's 1,000 times the iced tea compared to that little creature, if it's an entire creature, that would be a beria that gives it chashivus, and maybe it would not be batel. So there are two sugyas in Shas where beria comes up. One sugya is in Maseches Makos, where the Gemara talks about getting malkos for eating even less than a kezayis. Normally, one only gets malkos if you eat a kezayis, but if you ate a beria, the Gemara says, an entire thing, and it's not over there necessarily talking about a creature, it talks about a chita, a piece of wheat, the extra makaros over there, that one could get malkos for that as well. So that is one sugya, whether you get malkos for something less than a kezayis. The other sugya comes up in Shas is in Maseches Chulin, where the Gemara talks about a gid anoshe being usher and being chayiv for gid, even if it's mixed in with a whole bunch of other gidim, let's say you have with a whole bunch of other sinews or whatever that are kosher. So you have a gid anoshe that's mixed in. So the Gemara says, but why is that a problem? V'liftel beruba, let it be batel berov. If it's mixed in with kosher things and you have one gid anoshe, it should be batel berov. So the Gemara says, no, a gid anoshe beriyahu. A gid anoshe is an entire entity, it's an entire unit, it's a beria, and therefore it's not batel berov. So essentially there are two sugyas in Shas that talk about beria. They are both yoredeya sugyas. Neither of them relate to Arachayim, to Hilchos Brachos. They both relate to Kashrus. One does not relate at all Bizman Hazeh, because it's about Malkus, right? The sugya Maseches Makos is just about getting Malkus. It's definitely usher to eat less than a shear. So whether it's a beria or not, you're not allowed to eat a half a bug either, right? But one would get Malkus for eating an entire beria, even if it's less than a gezayis. That's not related. That doesn't matter la halacha at all, unfortunately, Bizman Hazeh, because we don't have a Sanhedrin who can give Malkus. In fact, the entire smicha controversy from 500 years ago, in the times of Maran Beit Yosef and the Alshich and Mabit and many others, was based on this idea. I don't know how familiar you are with this chapter in history, but there was a smich was this week's parasha, so it's so we could talk about it. There was a point right after the Inquisition that a number of people who were persecuted in Spain, and because of the persecution, acted outwardly as Christians, made their way to Eretz Yisrael, specifically to Tzfat, and they went to the Rabbanim in Tzfat, and they said, we feel like we're chayev kares for what we've done, and we know that the Gemara says, the chayev krisus shalaku are nifturu mikrisasan, that if you're chayev kares and you get malkus, you're pater from your kares. So they asked for malkus. Unbelievable, no? They asked for malkus. They said, we want malkus so that we won't have to face kares min hashamayim. They believed that they're really chayev kares. Only problem is, who's going to give you malkus? We can't give malkus. We can't be dan someone malkus. So they started a whole discussion. We can give malkus if only we had smicha. If we had smicha, then we could put together a Sanhedrin and give malkus. But can we have smicha? So one of the basic requirements for smicha is that it goes ish mi pi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. That it has to be handed down ish mi pi ish. But once the chain is broken, so the chain is broken. You're done. You can't do smicha. So the Rambam writes in Perush Mishnayos, that in Sanhedrin, that no, smicha can come back. It has to be able to come back without a direct chain. How do I know it has to be able to come back without a direct chain? Because prior to Tchias HaMesim, we're going to have to build the Beis HaMikdash. In order to build the Beis HaMikdash, you need a Sanhedrin to deal with most of Alir Vazaros and to pass the Malachos. So you need a Sanhedrin. How in the world are we going to have a Sanhedrin if in order to qualify for Sanhedrin, you need Smicha? And that's going to happen before Tchias HaMesim. So we're not going to have Moshe Rabbeinu come back and give Smicha. So there, but perforce, there has to be a way to give Smicha without Ish Mipi Ish. So the Rambam says it must be that since the notion of smicha is a Klal Yisrael issue, if you can get all of the Rabbanim to agree to give someone smicha, everyone to agree to give someone smicha, that person would have smicha. It would actually count as a legitimate smicha. That is the Rambam's shita. So all you need to do is get all the rabbis together. So that's what they did in Tzfat. They got all the rabbanim together in Tzfat, and they reinstituted smicha. And who had the smicha? The Alshech had the smicha. Maran Beit Yosef had the smicha. It lasted for about four generations. They actually kept the smicha going. One of the controversies, though, was that the rabbanim in Yerushalayim got very, very upset about it. The rabbanim in Yerushalayim said, wait a second, the Rambam says you need all Chachmei Yisrael. We don't recall being consulted about the issue of smicha. And the Chachmei Tzfat said, yeah, it's true. It was a big machlokes, Mari Beirav and Maral Bach. They're the ones that wrote the letters back and forth. So Rav Tukachinsky, Nira Kodesh HaMikdash, has like three chapters on this, on this whole episode in history. So they said, you're right, we didn't consult with you on it, but that's only because you're not as great as we are. We in Tzfat are much greater than you, and we're greater in number and greater in Chachma, and we voted, so it's okay, you're outvoted. So the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim said, it's true, you're allowed to outvote us, but we have to at least participate in the vote. When we participate in the vote, you can outvote us. But if you didn't, we never got an opportunity to participate in the vote, then you can't outvote us. So that was the whole back and forth. It doesn't seem that the Rabbanim in Tzfat were particularly moved by the arguments of the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim, and it seemed that that's not really what stopped it. What stopped it was, I don't know, lack of interest. I don't know what happened. Nor do I know if they ever actually gave anyone Malkus. Meaning that may have been the motivating factor to begin with, but I don't know if they ever actually did it. They actually gave these people Malkus. But so therefore, since that petered out, we don't have smicha, we're not giving anyone malchus. So the whole sugya in Makos is not relevant in Mahalacha. The sugya in Chulin is very relevant in Mahalacha. You have a beria that falls into your chicken soup. Mamish just got a shayla today. It only came through today. I realized last night as I'm driving back to camp that I haven't received a single phone call or text in over a week. And I lots of WhatsApps and emails, not a single phone call or text. I realize maybe it's not because people forgot about me, maybe it's because my phone is broken. So I called up the phone company, and it turned out my phone is broken. It turned out that, so there are probably lots of people mad that I haven't responded to their, so if you see anyone, like if you say, oh, I'm learning in Kelly Masmid and Rabbi Leibowitz, and they're like, oh, I hate that guy. So you should explain to them. So I got a text. I have no idea when it came, but this one came in right after Verizon or whatever, T-Mobile fixed my my SIM card or something. So the person said that his wife was making chicken soup probably 2 weeks ago, and on the top of the chicken soup they saw an ant. So they fished it out, obviously. But they're not sure. Maybe there's another ant in the chicken soup because they obviously have an ant problem in their house, and they're concerned that maybe this isn't the only ant. So what would be the halacha if you have a teeny little ant somewhere in the chicken soup? So normally laws of bittul, it's not even close to shishim or whatever, laws of bittul. So it would be batel. But a beria, can you eat an entire beria? Can you say a beria is batel? This is very nogea when it comes to frozen vegetables and stam vegetables in general, right? Why are we so concerned about checking vegetables? What do we care about checking vegetables? It's batel, you know. In the someone said that in the Department of Agriculture, when they consider the nutritional value of lettuce and broccoli and things like that, they count a little bit of protein because of the bugs that you're getting from the protein you're getting from the bugs that are in there. So it's okay, so it's in there, so it's batel b'shishim. It's very little bit of protein. It's not so much protein. So okay, so it's batel b'shishim. No, but if it's a beria, Beria is a nebetela. At least the Gemara is clear; it's not batel berov. So that's nogea la halacha. Certainly, this is the issue. You ever wonder if we're so makbid about strawberries and things like this? You know that they might have bugs, and how we check them and wash them. And years ago, the OU came out with a whole protocol about how you have to wash your strawberries with soap until they realized that people were grossed out by that, so they changed that, and now you only have to soak them for a little bit and spray them or something. But you know, we're so makbid about these things. You ever eat a chobani? Nobody. I eat chobanis for breakfast every day. So chobani, they have strawberry flavor. So who in the chobani factory is sitting there checking all these strawberries and washing them with soap? And is there someone doing that? So my impression is, I could be wrong about this, and I'm sure someone at some point will listen to one of these shiurim online and tell me that I'm wrong about it. But my impression is that there's no one that checks over there. What do they do with the chobani? They pulverize all the strawberries. It's completely pulverized, and therefore any bugs that are there are chopped up into a million pieces. So you don't have an entire bug. If you don't have an entire bug, it's batel. Now there is a halacha in levat nisur chachila. You're not allowed to do that. Meaning, if let's say I have unchecked vegetables in my soup, and I'm worried that there's a beria there, I'm not allowed to then just take a hand blender to blend the soup so that I could blend the bugs and then they'll be batel. That's a mevat nisul chachila. But if the recipe is to have a blended soup, and that's just the recipe of how you make it, you're not doing it to be mevatel the isir, that's just how you make it, like a smoothie, so you're allowed to, you know, make a smoothie with strawberries or whatever, and that would be perfectly fine. It happens to be in the Vat of the Five Towns, when, like in Berrylicious, if you get a smoothie, they actually do only use pre-checked strawberries. They only use the Bodek strawberries and things like that. So they're very machmir about these issues, because Rabbi Eisen is the administrator of the Vat of the Five Towns. His expertise is in the area of bugs and bug checking. So like our shitos and standards for bug checking are very, very high. But be that as it may, so that's very nogea la'alacha. And then there's the third, I would call it a sugya, but let's call it a non-sugya about beria, because there is no third place in Shas that we talk about beria, except in Yerushalmi. And that is by us. That is in Brachos, in Hilchos Brachos. That beria may play a role in Hilchos Brachos, specifically with regard to Bracha Achrona, because we were just discussing the other day that in order to say bracha rishona, you don't need a shir. Bracha rishona, even a mashu. But for bracha achrona, you need a shir. What if you ate a whole beria? You can say bracha achrona on a whole beria. Well, wait a second. What do you mean on a beria? So far, our examples of beria were a gidanasha, a bug. Like, you shouldn't be eating these things. So what do you mean a bracha achrona on a beria? So obviously, beria over here is referring to some other type of, not a gidanasha or a bug, something else that's a complete form, that is in its complete form, that even if it's less than a shir, might require a bracha achrona. It's important to note that that does not appear in the Bavli. It is only Yerushalmi. So Tosos over here, in the second section of this Tosos, Alam Tesam and Aleph, Tosos over here is bothered by this issue, because our Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan said a bracha achrona on an olive, even though the Gemara assumes there's no way on earth he was eating the pit of an olive. Who would eat the pit of an olive? And yet he said a bracha achrona on it, but you're only supposed to say a bracha achrona if you eat a kezayis. So how could he have eaten a kezayis if you take out the pit? Our Gemara asks. So what did our Gemara say? What was our Gemara's answer? It was a big olive. So the fruit part of the olive was a kezayis, even absent the pit. That was our Gemara's answer. But Tosfos points out that the Yerushalmi asks the same question. Ubi Yerushalmi, about the eighth, ninth line, and a skinny line in the Tosfos. Ubi Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yochanan, Hechi Baruch Hazayis, Halo Havi Shiura, V'kamer Mishum Beria. The Yerushalmi asks, how could Rabbi Yochanan have made a bracha achrona, have recited a bracha achrona on a zayis? It doesn't have a proper shear. And what does it say? V'kamer Mishum Beria. The Yerushalmi's answer is, he ate a whole zayis, it doesn't have to be a kezayis. If you eat a whole zayis, it's a beria, it's an entire entity, and that's why it requires a bracha achrona. Ta'afilu lo achal ela preida achas shel anav o preida achas shel rimon. Vay bruchei, mishum te beberia mevarch na'afilu pachos mi kezayis. So what does that say? Even if he eats what? Even if a person eats? Prey da achas shel anav or prey da achas shel rimon. What do you understand that as? A single grape What's tradeach for rimon? A single pomegranate seed. One would recite a bracha achrona according to that Yerushalmi, because a single pomegranate seed is a beria. And then Tos says, well, why didn't our Gemara give that answer? Why didn't our Gemara say Rabbi Yochanan said a bracha achrona? Not because he had a giant olive, but because an olive is a beria. So Tos says, it must be because our Gemara disagrees with Yerushalmi. So Tos says, v'cholik al Gemara didan, Yerushalmi is against our Gemara, k'demash ma'acha. Oh, no problem. Okay, so if our Gemara is against the Yerushalmi, how do we pass him when you have Machlokas Bavli Yerushalmi? Bavli. So Beri is a sugya in two places in Shas, Malkus and Bittul, but not a sugya in Hilchos Brachos. So ignore the whole thing, throw the whole thing out. There is no din of Beria in Hilchos Brachos. That's what Tosa says at first. By the way, why is it that we pass him like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi? Yerushalmi was written by the Holy, Holy Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, and Bavli by Holy Amoraim in Bavel. Well, why would you pass like the Babylonian scholars? If you had two major works of Allah that came out today, one in America and one in Eretz Yisrael, you think we'd respect the American one more? Right? There are Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael that will tell you that the Gedolei Hador in America would be your garbage man in Eretz Yisrael. What? Yeah, and Mincha Shlomo. I don't know. So, in Eretz Yisrael, by the way, Rav Shlomo Zalman carries the day, much more so than so, there is a riff at the very end of Maseches Erevin, where the riff assumes that the reason and it's a very interesting assumption, Rav Shechter often points out, historically, it's not so clear that it's correct. But the riff assumes that the reason we pass like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi is because the Bavli was written after the Yerushalmi, and therefore all the Chachmei Bavel knew the Yerushalmi, and they still said what they said. And there is a rule in Halacha that although there's a klal, that in Halacha k'talmid b'makom harav, that when a later generation argues on an earlier generation, meaning when a Talmud argues on a Rebbe, we don't pass on the Talmud against the Rebbe, there's another klal in Halacha, Hilchasa kibasra'a. What's the theory of Hilchasa kibasra'a? Why would you pass on like a later generation? I thought there's a Yeridas Hadoros. So shouldn't we say that, you know, to the Chacham today are much less than Rabbi Kiv Eger, who in turn was much less than the Ramah, who in turn was much less than the Rambam, who in turn was right? Shouldn't we assume a Yeridas Hadoros? Why would we assume Hilchus HaKibasra'a? So we assume Hilchus HaKibasra'a based on the midget standing on the shoulders of giants theory. The idea is that a giant can reach really high, but if the midget is standing on the head of the giant, let's say on the shoulders, probably not because the giant's reach will come. But if the midget is standing on the giant's head, he's even taller. So the understanding is, if the later generations knew of everything it said in the earlier generations, and Afal Pikein, they argued, so it must be that they're building on that knowledge. And Hilchus HaKibasra. So that's what the Rif says, we pass on the Bavli against Yerushalmi. Question is whether that's historically accurate, that the Chachmei Bavel actually knew the Yerushalmi. But what's not questionable is that we do pass like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. The issue is why, and there are other possibilities. You have to look in the Kisvei Meretz Chayis. If you ever want to read a good Ben Azmanim Sefer about like how Torah Shebal Peh works and is transmitted, learn Kol Kisvei Meretz Chayis. It's two volumes, but you know, pick any one of these sections about his understanding of transmission of Torah Shebal Peh. Amazing, amazing hekif of all of Shas and Poskim and giving guidance in how to understand Torah Shebal Peh. Or you look in the Netziv in his introductions to the Hamek She'ela, he discusses other possibilities of why we pass him like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. Also worthwhile if you ever have, I don't know, 20 hours to really break your head to learn through the Netziv's Hakdamos. You know, sometimes the Hakdama is, I'd like to thank, it's like a speech at the Emmys, you know, I'd like to thank my wife and my producers, and you know, but like the Netziv like wasn't into that. The Netziv's Hakdamos were like, each one was like 15 pages of like heavy, heavy Torah. He has three Hakdamos to his commentary on the Shiltos, where he describes also the transmission of Torah Shebal Peh, and he gets into this, yeah.
The Rambam,
it's not clear if the Rambam has rules. He must have, because his whole Mahalich is to have rules, meaning in Sefer HaMitzvot, what the Rambam innovated in Sefer HaMitzvot that no one else had before was that he made rules. you know, anyone could count 613 mitzvahs as long as you could count or discount whatever you want. The trick is to come up with exactly 613 while following a set of rules. That the Rabbanans don't count, or, you know, how you count Lav Shebichlalos, things like that. The Rambam, that was the godless of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs. So the Rambam, you would imagine that he had rules in Psak that he followed, but no one is particularly clear on what they are. Meaning, because there are times that it seems that he follows Yerushalmi or Midrashim against the Bavli, but the majority of times not. I don't think that's a rule, an ironclad rule that he always follows. And it wouldn't make sense for him to do that, to follow Yerushalmi against the Bavli on a consistent basis, because the Rambam, by his own admission, says, I always follow the Rif. He says, the Rif is the, you know, he's the one that we, so he says, I always follow the Rif in my entire Sefer, except for three places. I follow the Rif. That's what he writes. Whether that's true or not, that's also an issue, because there are more than three places where the Rambam doesn't follow the Shita Sarif. He must mean something by that, but, you know, he doesn't mean that he always thought. The reason the Rambam was so enamored with the Rif was because of his own family history. Who is the Rif's number one Talmud? The Rif's number one Talmud was the Rimi Gash. Who was the Rimi Gash to the Rambam? So the Rimi Gash was the Rambam's father's Rebbe, Maimon's Rebbe. And the Rambam refers to the Rimi Gash as his major inspiration in Torah and Yerushalayim. And how when he thinks about the Rimi Gash, he talks about the Rimi Gash, says, when I think about the Rimi Gash, I shudder, you know, just contemplating his greatness. And, you know, like he talks about the Rimi Gash. Can you imagine the Rambam talking about someone like that? You know, so it happens to be, it's interesting, because he calls him his Rebbe, but the Rimi Gash died when the Rambam was like five. So, like, I don't know how much he could have done. Rambam, I'm sure, was a very precocious child, but still, you know, 5 or 6 years old. So the legend has it was that his father brought him to the Rimi Gash when the Rimi Gash was on his deathbed, and the Rimi Gash gave him a bracha that he's going to be a great eagle for the Jewish people, he's going to be someone who's going to accomplish great things for the Jewish people, and that bracha made a tremendous roshem on the Rambam. So either the Rimi Gash, you know, had a lucky guess, or there was some koach to that bracha that the Rambam became the Rambam. In fact, who was it? Someone, one of the great Rishonim said that I forget which one, said that if the Rimi Gash were alive in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have been a close call who to give the Torah to. Like, this is the kind of respect that the Rimi Gash got from the... So the Rimi Gash is the Talmud of the Rif. So the Rambam says, you know, I always follow the Rif. That's our tradition. You know, that's his Masara. That's what he follows. Okay, also, fascinating topics historically. You know, you got to ask Rabbi Beryl Wine to talk about stuff like that.
Or the other
Rabbi Ari Leibowitz. Yes, I'm sure
you
could.
Rimi Gash.
What?
Does he have Sfarad Rimi Gash?
They have like seven from the Rimi Gash, you know. But he's quoted in a number of Rishonim. I don't know if we have any major, you know, he's quoted all over the place in Rishonim. Okay, so what do we have so far? The Yerushalmi and the Bavli seem to take different approaches to why it is that Rabbi Yochanan said a bracha achron. Yerushalmi says because of Beria, and the Bavli says because he was eating a giant olive. So we have to figure out, is the Bavli necessarily against Yerushalmi? Tosos certainly thinks so, at least the first day on Tosos, that the Bavli is against Yerushalmi, and therefore we pass like the Bavli, end of story, ignore Beria, there is no sugi of Beria in Hilchos Brachos, let's move on already to the next shir, right? That would be what the first day on Tosos would say. But, obviously, it's not that simple, because we're having shir today. So there's got to be more to the story. And how do we paskin in that machlokas rishonim that we're going to see? Also, how do you define a beria? Would you have guessed that a pomegranate seed is a beria? A beria means an entire unit. You know what I would have said is a beria? A pomegranate is a beria, the whole thing. That's a beria. But a pomegranate seed is a, what makes something a beria? How do we define a beria? What about like a jelly bean? If you hold that you have to make a bracha achrona on a beria, you eat an entire jelly bean. So is that a beria? Or do you say no, it's paksim
exai?
Ah, so it's not natural, it didn't grow that way. Okay, so maybe that plays a role. And most importantly, probably, is the din of beria, or the geder of beria, the definition of beria, the same in Hilchos Brachos as it is in Yaradeya, in Hilchos Kashrus. meaning is whatever we're going to call a beria in Hilchos Kashrus, the definition of beria in Hilchos Brachos, or maybe we're just borrowing the term. But the gedarim of the term, the definitions are not the same. Sometimes you have a word in Shas that means different things in different contexts. Same word means different things in different contexts. Rav Shechter always gives his favorite example is chazaka. What does the word chazaka mean? Five different things throughout Shas. Sometimes it means you've been somewhere for 3 years, in land for 3 years, so you no longer need a shtah. Sometimes it means aruba delesa kaman. You know, it's just the way things work. Sometimes it means possession. Chazaka means a whole bunch of... Sometimes it means a form of kinyan on karka. None of these have anything to do with each other. It's not like that there's one common thread that, you know, that weaves through all of the rules of... It's just the same word happens to be used to describe five entirely different contexts. Sometimes you have different words that mean the same thing. And this is why computers have not yet replaced man in terms of learning Torah. Because a computer can find chazaka everywhere. This is one of the reasons. A computer can find the word chazaka everywhere, but it doesn't always mean the same thing. So you're not necessarily finding anything that has anything to do with each other. Does the word beria, as it relates to Hilchos Brachos, if it relates to Hilchos Brachos, have anything to do with what a beria is with regard to Yardea? And if not, what are the differences between the definitions? For example, the Rishonim are bothered. Why is it that a Gid HaNosha is referred to explicitly as by the Gemara as a beria? Teeny tiny Gid HaNosha, a tiny animal. So it has a tiny Gid HaNosha. It's a beria, it's not bata. That's explicit in the Gemara. Yet Nivela is not a beria. If you were to eat, some quantity of Nivela gets mixed in, we don't say the Nivela is a beria. So we showed him a bother by this. Rashi says, no, beria means something that's asu mitchilaso, mitchilas priyaso. That from the moment it came into this world, it was asur. That's a beria. So Nivela is not a beria, because Nivela was a regular animal. It just wasn't shechted properly. And that's how it became a Nivela, but it was a regular kosher animal. It was a cow, it was a sheep, that's how Rashi writes in Masechus Chumim. That can't have anything to do with Hilchos Brachos. Because in Hilchos Brachos, we're not talking about something being usher. It's not about being usher. What's it about? Okay, but then everything is usher. Then the whole world is usher. The whole world is usher. Then Nevela's usher. Nevela's mitzvah is real also. No. So that can't have anything to do with Hilchos Brachos. Sharp, but no. that can't have anything to do with Hilchos Brachos. That is, other Rishonim, the Ran, I believe, says that a beria is like, you know, when the Torah says that something's aser, so you can't eat nevela. So what does eating mean? It means a kazayas, right? You can't eat a bird. Let's say the Torah gives us a list of non-kosher birds. And every other bird that's not on that list is assumed to be kosher. This is a halachic anomaly, right? Because how many birds are on the list of non-kosher? You got the number. But there aren't that many. You know how many different species of birds there are in the world? Like thousands, right? And there are like 10, I don't remember the exact number, that are not kosher. Every other bird is kosher. Yet, how many birds do we actually eat? Like 10. Maybe 10. You know, chicken, doves, no. Pigeons. I mean, we don't actually, but we could. Goose, turkey for some, right? right, there are only so many birds that we eat. I actually have a friend who I went to MTA and Karen Biavna and YU with. We were in the same system all the way through. We were in a Shech Tashir together, who now works for the Orthodox Union, and he is their bird specialist. He goes around the world finding places where they have strange birds that they have a Masorah on, that the Masorah would be lost if not for him finding the tribe in Africa that has a Masorah that this bird is kosher, and he's sort of maintaining a database of like what is a kosher bird, because we require a Masorah on a bird to know that it's not one of the birds that are mentioned in the Chumash as being a non-kosher bird. So that's what we require, a Masorah for the bird to be a kosher bird. So he goes around collecting a Masorah. His name is... Anyone know? Rabbi Loiki, yes. I always point out that if someone would have told me when I was in MTA with him that Chaim Loike would be an expert in strange birds, I would say exactly. You know, he was always had an eclectic interest, like a very brilliant and very interesting fellow. So he's the world's expert in strange birds. So let's say you have a duchifas, right? That's a bird. It's a non-kosher bird. You have a teeny tiny duchifas, and the Torah tells you that a duchifas is asur. You're not allowed to eat a duchifas. So okay, so kezayis of a duchifas, because that's what eat means. But say a number of Rishonim, I believe the Ran says this way, when the Torah says don't eat a duchifas, it's telling you that a duchifas is asur, meaning it has to be telling you that regardless of the size of the bird, if you have that bird, it's defined as that bird, you eat it, beak and feathers and all, as a beria, then it's asur. Then you get your chayiv for that. That's part of the shem iser in the Torah.
Is this the makar?
What?
Is this the makar for beria?
This is how how the Ran explains beria, right? So, meaning when the Torah says, don't eat nevela, it's not describing an entity. Nevela can come in any quantity. You can have little pieces, big pieces of it. When the Torah describes a gid anasha, it's describing an entity. It's describing a unit. It's describing a thing. So when you eat the entire gid anasha, regardless of its size, you have violated the Isser in the Torah. When the Torah describes a duchifas, it's describing an entity, a thing, a type of bird. When you eat the duchifas, you have violated that Isser in the Torah. If that's the definition of beria, also, does that necessarily carry over to Hilchos Brachos? You could argue that, yeah, anything that's an entity, that's a thing, that's not just, a shear, an amount, but it's a full entity, that would be the definition. The question is then, what defines an entity? Like Ari was saying before, jelly bean can't be an entity, a person made that into an entity. So what makes something into an entity or not an entity? Right? Would a donut not, because it has a hole in the middle? Oh, then we have to discuss, what about the inedible parts of the entity? If you eat the entire edible part of the entity, but none of the inedible parts, have you eaten a beria? If Rabbi Yochanan didn't eat the pit, but is the Yerushalmi assuming that Rabbi Yochanan ate the pit? I mean, the Yerushalmi says, I don't understand, Rabbi Yochanan, how did he make a bracha achrona? He only ate one olive, and there's no shir kazayis in one olive. What do you mean there's no shir kazayis in one olive? Of course there's a shir kazayis in one olive. No, not if you take out the pit. And what's Yerushalmi's answer? He ate a beria. Well, wait a second. Did he take out the pit or not? If he took out the pit, then he didn't eat a beria. He didn't eat the whole thing. If he didn't take out the pit, then he's got a kazayis. You don't need to say beria. Right? So what exactly is going on? And that's really the major halachic question in Hilchos Brachos. How you define beria when there are inedible parts to the beria?
So could that be the nekudas machlokas between the Bavli and the Rishalmi? Not just if the concept of beria exists.
Oh, good, good, good. We'll get there. We'll get there, Be'ez Hashem. Metzius, why? Now, then we're going to discuss what's the logic, or maybe we'll discuss, we'll see, what's the logic of the din beria? Is there any svara? So let's just run, we're going to do this pretty quickly, okay? So again, Tosa says, Bavli's against Yerushalmi, we pass on like the Bavli, end of story. Beis Yosef, in Simin Reish Yud, if you look in source number 4, at the very end, after quoting all the Rishonim that we're about to mention, about the Dinam of Beria in regard to Brachos, he says, by the way, the Rif doesn't mention it, nor does the Rambam. The Rif and the Rambam talk about eat a kazayis, you say a bracha achrona, you don't eat a kazayis, you don't say a bracha achrona. End of story. Nothing about beria. So it must be that the Rif and the Rambam learnt like Tosfos. This is Machlokas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, we pass like the Bavli. There is no such din called beria in Hilchos Brachos. Shain, Gnut, that's it, says the Beis Yosef. If you pass like the majority of Rif, Rambam, and Rush, the Rif and the Rambam are of one mind over here, that there is no such din of beria. The Orsameach, in the fifth paragraph of Hilchos Brachos, even suggests that the Bavli and Yerushalmi here are lishitasam. The Yerushalmi never mentions a requirement of a kedei svia to be chayiv in birchas hamazon min haTorah. Meaning, the Yerushalmi holds that you're chayiv mida oraisa if you eat just a kazayis or a gebetza. And that's why the Yerushalmi says if a person is masupak if he benched, we go l'chumra, never considering that, wait a second, masupak if you benched, what? What did you eat? You know, you, if I were to ask you, safek whether you did a mitzvah or not, do you have to do it again? No, what's the rule? Safek, daraisa l'chumra drabana l'chula, right? So if you ate a kedei svia and you're not sure if you benched, now you have a safek, daraisa. If you ate a kazayas and you're not sure if you benched, you have a safek, drabana, right? Yerushalmi says, no, it doesn't start discussing kazayas. If you're mesubik, if you're benching, you're chayiv and benching, l'chumra. What? What if I only ate a kazayas? Why would I go l'chumra? Why? Because Yerushalmi assumes even when you only eat a kazayas, the chiv, the bench is Doraisa. That's Yerushalmi. That it's Doraisa. A beria is a chiddush that when you have the entire entity, it's ki'ilu, it's a kazayas. You can't say a beria is like svia. It's not like svia. Because svia is a feeling that a human being has. Kazayas is an objective shear. It's a din in the cheftz and not a din in the gavra, right? So you could say a berry is like a kazayas. Ah, so the Yerushalmi l'shitasam that says that a kazayas is a mechayev of birch samazam idar raisa will say that a berry is a mechayev of birch samazam or a bracha achrona because it's din in the cheftza and such a cheftza is already chayev in birch samazam. The Bavli holds that a kazayas is only drabana. And only kedei svia is daraisa. So the Gemara in Daf Chaf and Beis, the Gemara says that they were complaining, the Malachim were complaining, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows favoritism to Klal Yisrael over everyone else, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'chilo es apanam liYisrael? Zach, you remember this Gemara? V'chilo es apanam liYisrael? Should I not show favoritism to Klal Yisrael? You know what they do for me? I write in my Torah ve'achalta v'savata v'erachta that they only have to bench when they eat savata, when they have svia, when they're satiated, they had a whole big meal, and they say a bracha achroni even when they only eat a kazayas, a kabetza. Ooh, they take upon such a chumra. Very clear that it's only a din terabanan to say a bracha achroni or a kazayas or a kabetza. Really, it would require a kedei svia. There's another sugya in Mem Tesam Beis Machlok Shemayin and Rabbi Yehuda. How you define visavata? Is visavata a kebetza or is visavata a kezayis plus a drink? But Rov Rishon would say that's asmachta. They're only talking on the level of mitra rabbanon over there. On a doraisa level, one is only chayiv and benching according to the Bavli when you eat a kedei svia. So if that's the case, what do you say? There's a din of beria midaraisa. That a beria is like a svia? That doesn't make sense. A beria is not like a kedei svia. Kedei svia is that I'm full. So it wouldn't make sense that there would be a din of beria. And that's why the Bavli doesn't have a din of beria. That's all if you assume, like the first day in Tosfos said, it's machlok, it's Bavli, Yerushalmi, whether there exists a din of beria. We have extra makoros here. That's if you assume, like the Bavli, that there is no din of beria. Good, you assume like Tosfos that smachlok is Bavli Yerushalmi, and we pass them like the Bavli. There is no din of beria, which again would mean lahalach. We have nothing to worry about. But then Tosfos quotes another day. Tosfos the name of Rabbeinu Yossi. I don't know how often Tosfos quotes a Bala Tosfos by the name of Rabbeinu Yossi, but over here he does, and he says, no, the Bavli and Yerushalmi agree with each other, but the Bavli assumes that you remove the pit, so it's not a beria. Whereas the Yerushalmi assumes that it was shalem with the pit, so it is a beria. So there is a din of beria, even according to the Bavli. You just don't have it in our Gemara because Rabbi Yochanan wasn't eating the olive pit. So the Yerushalmi is assuming he did eat the olive pit, which then begs the question, why does Yerushalmi even need to come on to beria? Couldn't the Yerushalmi just say that he's chayiv because he ate a kazayas? Ooh, so let's take a look and see what people say. The Rashba is a little more explicit than Tosfos is in explaining that the Yerushalmi and the Bavli are in agreement with each other, and the Rashba writes that the Yerushalmi assumes that Rabbi Yochanan ate the pit. If you look carefully at the Ramah in Reish Yud Sif Aleph, which again we're not going to have time to look at everything inside now, but I would like if you would spend some time going through this afterwards. just get down like the basics. The Ramah seems like the Rashba, that it's only a beria if you actually ate the pit. Why does Ramah seem like the Rashba? Because the Ramah says you only ate the pit, and the Gra, and the Bira Gra says, yeah, Rashba. The Bira Gra tries to give Mar Makamos. It's footnotes. So the Bira Gra says, oh, you know where the Ramah got that from? It's the Rashba. So the Rashba assumes it's only a beria if you actually ate the pit. Otherwise, it is not a beria. Magen Avraham says, come on, who eats pits? There's no way you can eat an olive pit. But Magen Avraham says, sometimes, if you chew on the pit and you suck out what's inside of the pit, there will be some nutritional value and something that's edible, and then you'll spit out the, so to speak, the shell of the pit, the wooden part of the pit that has no nutritional. Magen Avraham says it's a beria even if you didn't swallow the pit, but as long as you chewed out the inside of the pit. Ooh, a little bit of a different definition. You don't have to eat the entire pit. If the Magen Avraham is correct, we understand the Yerushalmi much, much better. Why? What did the Yerushalmi say? How could Rabbi Yochanan say bracha achrona? He only ate an olive. And what is Yerushalmi's answer? It's a beria. What do you mean it's a beria? If it's a beria, it's a kezayis also. If he ate the pit, it's a kezayis also. But no, it's not a kezayis. Why is it not a kezayis? Because he didn't eat the whole pit. He sucked out what he can from the pit, and he spit out the rest of it, so it's a little bit pachos mikazayis. Oh, but it's a beria. So that's how Magen Avraham understands. Prima Gadim in the Sefer Rosh Yosef on Maseches Brachos says, you know how you define a beria by an olive? Put the whole olive in your mouth, then you spit out the pit. It's still that you ate a beria. But if you cut the olive open, peel the fruit off of the pit, and then put the fruit in your mouth, and never put the pit in your mouth, then it's not a beria. Whoa! What does that tell you? Beria is not defined by what you ate. It's defined by how it was when you put it in your mouth. So you don't want to eat a whole grape because you're afraid of shayla v'beria. According to the Prima Gadim, what can you do? Take the grape, cut it in half, like you do for little kids, and eat two halves of the grape. It's not a beria. When I put it in my mouth, it wasn't a beria. It was only a half. Beria is defined by what you put in your mouth, which is a remarkable chiddush. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, in the back of the Gemara, if you look in the back of your Gemara, in his comments in the back of the Gemara, says that there's no way a pit is necessary, that you have to eat the pit for it to be a beria, because it's not edible. The Bavli is assuming that it's moliach, that we're dealing with a salted olive, and that takes away its status of a beria anyway. You know, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin says, the Bavli doesn't argue with the Yerushalmi. It's a beria when you eat an olive without the pit. That's a beria anyway. And that's what the Yerushalmi says. Of course Rabbi Yochanan didn't eat the pit. No normal human being eats the pit. It's a beria anyway. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, in our Gemara we can't say beria, because once it's maliach, it's not a beria. Why is that a critical comment? What's he assuming? What does maliach mean? It's salted, it's pickled. Why does that take away the status of beria? No, when it's salted and pickled, it's more delicious. I happen to hate olives, but... Oh, it's not natural.
No, it's not. If it's salted, then the seed was probably removed, and the pit was probably removed.
No, he thinks the pit doesn't matter. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin's whole word is that a pit is not edible. Why would a pit matter for a beria? He says, no, but it's not a beria anyway in the Bavli, because the Bavli wasn't talking about eating a raw olive. He's talking about eating a salted olive, a pickled olive. It's not kibriyaso because it's not in its natural state. Beria means kibriyaso. In its original natural state, once it's been tampered with, it's not a beria anymore. Is that true in Yeridea? Probably not, right? You have a chocolate-covered bug, right? A cooked bug, it's probably still a beria. A salted bug, probably still a beria. So that would seem to be a localized, that kibriyaso, it has to be in its original state, a very big chiddush. But it's not only Rabbi Yaakov Emdin. The Ravya says so explicitly. So it's a rishon. So it's the easiest place to find it is Rabbi Yaakov Emdin in the back of the Gemara. The Rush, this obviously whenever you're talking halacha, you look Rambam Rif Rush, but the Rambam Rif have nothing to say over here because they think the whole concept doesn't exist. The Rush in Siman Tes Zayin, and again, I would like, if you have an opportunity to take a look inside, says it all depends not on how you put it in your mouth, but on how it's brought in front of you, how it's presented on a plate to you. If it's presented to you as a single unit, then it is a beria. But if it's deseeded before it's brought in front of you, then it's not a beria. The Rush seems to be assuming you don't have to eat the pit for it to be a beria. But you have to be presented with an olive with its pit inside of it, and then you eat the olive and spit out the pit, and you've eaten a beria. But if you're presented with only the fruit part of the olive and it's been deseeded, well, then it's not a beria. What is the Rush assuming? In terms of the definition of beria, we now have a third critical time period or point of time where you're going to say, is this a beria or not? Right? The Pasha Pshat, the way the Rav Rishonim seem to understand, it's what you swallow. Right? The Rashba, the Ramah, it's what you swallow. Did I swallow the whole thing? Did I eat the whole thing? Did I actually ingest the entire thing? That defines beria. We had the Magen Avraham. Was it the Magen Avraham? That it's based on what you put in your mouth. Not swallow, I'm going to spit out the pit. It's what I put in my mouth. Now you have the Rush who says, no, not even that. It's already a beria if you eat every edible part of an item that's brought in front of you whole. How it's presented to you defines its wholeness. You have a similar sheet in the Netziv in Hilchos Shabbos, but it's the opposite. The Netziv in Hilchos Shabbos talks about Lecha Mishnah. What if you only have one challah? Has this ever happened to you? You have one challah in the house. Oh, we forgot to buy the other challah. It was a small meal. It's Erev Pesach, whatever, you know. Can't use a matzah because it's Erev Pesach. You know, whatever it is. You have one challah in the house. So what do you do? The Netziv has a shita that shleimus of a challah is defined not by how it was baked, but how it was presented to you. So if it was brought in front of you as a half a loaf, and you never saw it whole, it was just brought in front of you as a half a loaf, that is a shalem. So if you have only one challah in the house, and the Tziv says the best thing to do, tell your wife to cut it in half before she brings it in. Then she'll bring it in as two halves. It's presented to you in that state. So that's Lecha Mishnah. That's two shlemos. Unbelievable. Meshiv Dover, and the Tziv writes like this. Why? Because the definition of its wholeness is not by how it's created, how it was made, how you eat it. The definition of its wholeness is how it's brought in front of you. I say it's the opposite of the Rush. Why is it the opposite of the Rush? Because the Rush is saying that if it's brought in front of you in half, then it was never a beria. Right? It's only a beria if it's brought in front of you complete. But that's the sheet of the Rush, yeah. With the pit, complete means with everything. I'm not sure. Gotta look carefully at the Rush. I'm not sure. Rabbeinu Yonah says, well, wait a second. Do you need to eat the pit in order for it to be a beria? He says, it depends. Is it the derech to eat the pit? Is it normal? Our Gemara assumes no. And therefore, our Gemara assumes that he didn't eat the pit. The Yerushalmi maybe assumed that it was normal to eat the pit of an olive. And that's why it was a beria. Darkei Moshe is just not sure. How do you define normal? You know, is eating a black jelly bean normal? Right? So how many people, does it depend on the majority of society? Or does it depend on what you would normally eat? That's what Darkei Moshe is not sure within Rabbeinu. But what emerges is, let's just say, you know, keep stock of what we have over here. L'chora, five definitions of beria. The Gra, quoting the Rashba, and seemingly the Shita of the Rama, you have to eat the pit. If you want to say you ate a beria, you got to eat the pit. Prima Gadim Bidas HaRashba, you have to put it in your mouth, but then you don't have to eat the pit. The Magen Avraham, not only put it in your mouth, you have to suck out the edible part of the pit when you put it in your mouth. The Rush, doesn't have to go in your mouth, the pit. Doesn't have to go in your mouth. It just has to be brought in front of you. And Rabbeinu Yonah, you only have to eat the pit if the pit is edible. and normal people would eat it, or it's normal to eat. If it's not normal to eat, then you wouldn't have to eat the pit. Lahalacha, what does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? So Shulchan Aruch writes, this is in source number 7. Hochel pachus mikazayis bein mi pas bein mi sharochna. Ashos pachus mi revis bein mi yain bein mi sharmashkin. Mivarech tchila bracha aru yelosa amin alach ravina mivarech klav. If you have less than a shear, you don't say bracha achrona. V'yesh mistapkim lomar shal davar shuhu kibriyaso. There are those that are not sure and suggest that something that is in its original state, kigon, gargir shalanov, o shal rimon, like a grape or a pomegranate seed, shemavarchin liachrov afal bishen bo kezayis, that you would say a bracha achrona even though it's less than a kezayis. Lekach. Now, why does he only quote it as a yesh? Because obviously the Mechaber is not convinced. Why is he not convinced? Rambam in the Rif. Lekach nechol nizar shalol lechol beri apachas mikazayis. This is an attitude many Rishonim have in Ilchus Brachos. Avoid the suffix. Avoid the suffix. Don't eat one grape. Eat three grapes, and therefore you'll make sure you have a kazayis. Don't eat one pomegranate seed. Eat however many it takes to get a kazayis of pomegranate seeds. Because when you do that, you're risking the issue of beria. Now, just to close the loop on the comparison between beria here and beria in Yeridea, it is abundantly clear to me that they are not the same halacha. The Gemara Makos explains that Reb Shimon holds you could be mechayev on a kol shuhu of tevel because tevel is a beria. But the Chum hold that only a berias neshama is called beria. What's berias neshama?
A live animal.
Yeah, it has to be a live animal. No one in Hilchus Brachos suggests that in order for a beria to be a beria, it has to be a berias neshama. Right? Clearly, the Yerushalmi assumes that for Brachos, you don't need the Chachamim's standard of beria. Because it doesn't have to be a live animal. We're saying, you know, an olive is a beria. Furthermore, the Prima Gadim in Siman Reish Yod Eishel Avram Sivkatan Dalid points out, according to the Rashi, it depends how it's brought in front of you. That is clearly not a halacha in Yerideya. How it's brought in front of you. Whether it's batel in a tyroves has nothing to do with how it's brought in front of you. Because it's not brought in front of you as a unit anymore. It's already in a tyroves. It's already mixed in with something else. It's already in a mixture, and you're trying to determine whether it's batel or not. So obviously, its definition of beria is not determined based on how it's brought in front of you in Yerideya. The fact that Rabbeinu Yonah holds that anything with inedible parts can't be a beria is not true in Yerideya. Simply not true in Yerideya. Has to be against Yerideya. Why? Because what does the Gemara in Chulin say? You eat a duchifas. You eat an ov katan, a tiny little bird. It is a beria. But wait a second. You have to eat the whole bird, including feathers, beak. None of that is edible, you would assume. You can't say that the entire bird is edible. And yet, the entire bird must be eaten in order for it to be a beria. So for Rabbeinu Yonah to say that in Hilchus Brachos it's a beria even if you spit out the pit, even if you don't eat the pit, because the pit's not edible. Oh, since when does edibility matter? It's only a beria if you have every part of it. No, you see that Rabbeinu Yonah assumes that in Hilchus Brachos, what's called a beria in Hilchus Brachos and what's called a beria in Yerideya are not the same. I'll just close with a comment from Salvechik guys in the Shuri Arav on Tarovis and Bas Michalav. I meant to bring the Sefer with me. I forgot to look at it when I was at home yesterday. But if I recall correctly, if Salvation explains the notion of beria, is that the way he explains Shittas HaTosos in the Ran, really, is that the Torah asks what he calls sometimes an Isser Chomer and sometimes an Isser Tzura. That sometimes it's about the substance and sometimes it's about the form. Kezayis is substance. How much of the substance? It's almost like kamos and eichos, you know, quantity versus quality. That the Torah asks this quantity of this item. That's an isur chomer. Beria is an isur tzura. That it's complete. It's a full formed item. And that gives it chashivas. You see, when you're dealing with chomer, you need an amount to give it chashivas. But when you're dealing with an isur tzura, a gid anasha is aser. A duchifas is aser. I don't know why I picked the duchifas, but that entire form is aser. It's an isur tzura. That lamdus can transfer over nicely to ilchus brachos. That it's about the chashivus of the item. You need to have a certain chashivus, again, only according to the Bavli, not like, let's leave out Bavli Yisham. That lamdus, that you need a certain chashivus in order for something to be called a barrier, might translate over to Hilchus Brachos pretty well. That in order to require a bracha achrona, you need to have had a chashva amount. How do we define a chashva amount? Well, it might be defined by kidei sviya, it was enough to satisfy me. So, it has chashivas in my eyes. It might be defined as kezayis or kebetza because it's inherently a chashiv amount. Or it might be defined by its tzura. It's an entire unit. And as an entire unit, that gives it chashivas. But most likely, just like in Yeredeya, we assume that the definition of a unit has to be something that the Ribbono Shel Olam made as a unit, that's Beria, Kibriyaso. In Hilchos Brachos, we probably assume the same. That the definition of a unit is what the Ribbono Shel Olam created as a unit. So an entire jelly bean is not a Beria. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't create that as a unit, man created that as a unit. So I can't give it the chashivas. That chashivas has to be something that was granted by the Ribbono Shel Olam. I apologize that we did this year before you got to see the Mar Makomos, but I think it's kedai to go through, particularly, you know, if you just want a good summary of the Shitas of the Rishonim, the Beis Yosef in source number 4, Imamish just goes through all the Rishonim about the issue of Beria, and Be'ezus Hashem, on Sunday we will be moving on to a different topic. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody. I did go for an